Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along on this Saturday morning. On the phone with me is sports writer Andy Bull. He is the senior sports writer for The Guardian and author of the new book, Speed Kings, the 1932 Winter Olympics and the Fastest Men in the World. Andy Bull, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be on.
When I picked this up, I, of course, immediately thought of Daniel Brown's book, The Boys in the Boat, about the 1936 American rowing team. But you found quite a story here with the bobsledders of the 1932 Winter Olympics. What set you on course to write about these athletes?
Yeah, that's a good question. The Boys in the Boat is obviously a brilliant book, and there are some similarities. What started me off with Speed Kings was this one lovely little fact about one of the characters, which is that only one athlete in history has won a gold medal at the Winter Olympics and the Summer Olympics, and he was a man named Eddie Egan. When I found that out, I thought, wow, that has to be a story worth finding out about. I did, and it turned out that there was a whole book's worth of beautiful material there.
I was going to say, well, you know, Eddie Egan wasn't the first of these athletes that you focused on. That's Billy Fisk, but Eddie Egan was certainly played a central role in this, and it was quite a sport back then, bobsledding in the Jazz Age, back in the 1930s. It's not what we see today with those fancy space-age sleds. Describe what a bobsled was like back in the 1920s and 30s.
Bobsledding was a relatively new sport in the 1930s. It hadn't been around all that long, but it was the fastest way you could travel unless you were on a really top-end motor car. So, you know, speed itself was a relatively new concept then. People weren't used to traveling at great speeds. In a bobsled, you were going up to 70, 80 miles an hour. And really, that was as fast as you could go unless you were in a top-of-the-line sports car. It was a much more rudimentary version of the sport that we're familiar with today. So the sleds themselves didn't have sides. The riders weren't necessarily wearing helmets or protection. It was just a kind of 500-pound tray made out of wood and metal with leather straps to hold onto as you set off down the mountain.
It was very rudimentary in the early days, and there was a lot of development, but there were people who were interested. And you point out in your book, Speed Kings, that actually bobsledding started out as a social activity.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all relate to that experience of, you know, when you're a little child and you run up the hill and jump on a sled and set off down across the snowy fields. So people had always been doing that, but it began to kind of turn into this much more professional, organized sport in the town of San Moritz in Europe. And that was the great sort of winter retreat for the high society of Europe and America. It was where the glamorous people went to play in winter. And skiing hadn't really taken off then as a mass participation sport. What they did instead was bobsledding. They would all get together in groups of four or five, huddle onto these sleds, and set off down these mountains.
Not always the mountains. Actually, you point out in the book that a lot of times they're using the city streets.
Well, that's right. And the reason they had to build the first bobsled run was because the riders were going through the streets of San Moritz on these sleds, you know, dodging around horses and carts and various other vehicles. So it was enormously dangerous, and they ended up building these specialist tracks to host the races on. And in fact, it was still a pretty dangerous sport then. It was just that you were less likely to crash into a horse halfway down.
I'm speaking with Andy Bull, the author of Speed Kings, the 1932 Winter Olympics and the Fastest Men in the World. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And these men, we mentioned Billy Fisk, we mentioned Eddie Egan, and they were quite a lot here. They weren't professional athletes. These were thrill seekers who got into bobsledding to race, right?
That's exactly the right word you've settled on there, thrill seekers. And really, that's what drew me to this story, is that it's not so much about the sport itself as much as the type of person who wanted to risk their life trying to win an Olympic gold medal. They were thrill seekers, they were daredevils, but they weren't just professional sportsmen as we understand that today. You know, they had wider lives. Bobsled racing was only one of the many things they had going on. If you take a guy like Billy Fisk, he was a playboy, really, with this tremendous natural talent for racing and driving. But he had a degree from Cambridge University in the UK. He spent some time producing movies in Hollywood. He founded the skiing resort at Aspen, and he traveled the world as well. And, you know, that I just find something so romantic in that, the idea that this was a time when athletes could be more than just athletes.
And, of course, there's always a rogue in the crowd, too, and Jay O'Brien. Boy, the adventures of Jay were quite fun to read about in your book.
That's right. I mean, one of the things I wanted to do with this book was, you know, try and show these people warts and all. I think it's very easy to make someone out to be overly heroic by kind of whitewashing their character. The more I looked at Jay O'Brien, I mean, he had a lot of warts, let's put it that way. He was a gangster, a gambler. He was involved in sports fixing in the 1920s. And he sort of married his way into high society. He had a series of marriages to famous actresses, one with Mae Murray, who was one of the great Hollywood icons of the time. And Mae Murray always said in her memoirs that Jay had actually forced her to marry him at gunpoint. Whether that was actually true or not, you know, no one's around to verify it, sadly. But that was always Mae's version of the story.
Well, as you set out to share this story, I imagine you were focusing on the bobsledding, but these men and their lives and what they did really became an integral part of the story and in the development of bobsledding. You talk about the 1928 Winter Olympics that were held in St. Moritz, and it was the early years of the Winter Olympics. They weren't even called the Winter Olympics at the time, and in those early years, they were something of a disaster, especially in that 1928 competition.
Yeah, that's right. The Winter Olympics, I mean, the people running the Summer Olympics, the IOC, didn't really want a Winter Olympic competition. And it was kind of reluctantly that they set out on that whole project. And 28 in St. Moritz, the Winter Olympics were ruined by terrible weather, really, which kind of washed out the entire competition. The 32 games, the one that's at the heart of Speed Kings, that's really the first modern Winter Olympics as we think of it today. It was the first in American soil. And it was just a much bigger, grander event with many more athletes, many more events, much more publicity. That's really the starting point of the modern Winter Olympics, I would say, is the 32 games, which was another interesting aspect of it.
Well, at least they brought some professionalism to it when it came to Lake Placid, because they actually built a dedicated bobsled course. In St. Moritz, they basically just carved tunnels in the snow, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. In St. Moritz, they do race in carved tunnels in the snow. They built a dedicated course. They got one of the world's finest engineers to help them build it. The course they built was so dangerous and so fast that it almost cost several of the athletes their lives.
I found it fun that in that 1928 Olympics, that when the American team was being put together, that they put out a newspaper advertisement, said, if you're an American and in St. Moritz here in February, come on down and ride the bobsled with us.
It's difficult to believe, isn't it? That's one of my favorite little details in the book, is that, yes, several members of the U.S. team in 1928 joined the team after answering a newspaper advert in the Paris edition of the Herald Tribune. I mean, there are some lovely recollections from one of those men about how, you know, he answered this advert and got a letter back saying, well, come on down to St. Moritz. We'll see you there in a couple of weeks, and you're on the team.
And he had, a couple of days to, that's Mason, right? Had a couple of days to practice, did the competition. They won. Basically, they were handed the medal. He hopped on the train and left and went back.
That was his sporting career in its entirety. So, you know, it didn't take that much skill to be one of the passengers on the sled. They were almost there for ballast, although it was still a very dangerous thing they were doing. The guy who had all the skill was always the driver, and really that's, again, why Billy is the hero of the book.
The book is Speed Kings, the 1932 Winter Olympics and the Fastest Men in the World by Andy Bull. Details at our website, wvxu.org. And all these men were, as I had said earlier, kind of thrill seekers. They were looking for that speed and that fun. But as you just mentioned, most of the people in that bobsled, five people in the bobsled, were just dead weight more than anything. And this is the bobsleds we see today have fronts and sides, but back then, you mentioned earlier, open. They just held onto rails on the side, and they were literally laying on top of each other, going down head first.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was. I did a little bobsled racing while I was researching the book because I thought, well, you know, you can't write well about a subject like this unless you know firsthand what it feels like to go down that mountain. But what you can't replicate is what it must have felt exactly like for them, because they were on these open sleds. You know, it was so dangerous what they were doing. They were traveling so fast, and it must have felt even faster because the sleds were so flat and rickety and unsafe. You would have been so close to the ice.
And the spectators were not always safe either, right?
That's right, that's right. There were definitely, the sleds would fly off the course, you know, at tremendous speed, at sort of 70 miles an hour, the sled would come up off the top of the corner. And if the riders were unlucky or if the driver wasn't skilled enough, they would shoot up over the corner, sometimes through the spectators, and set off down the mountain, you know. So you can imagine it was the sport everyone wanted to watch in 32 because it was so spectacular. It was so much fun, and people love crashes, let's be honest. That's one of the things people love about an event like this.
Well,
so you had all these great writers. That's another thing I loved about Speed Kings, is that, you know, so many of the great American writers of the time, guys like Damon Runyon and Grantland Rice and Westbrook Pegler, they were all fascinated by this new sport as well, and they were all writing about it themselves.
I wanted to ask about your ride down. When I learned about your trip down, you know, what you thought? Is it as fun as it looks? You know what? From a spectator's perspective, it looks like fun to go that fast and go hurtling down the mountain. It doesn't look like fun when those sleds turn upside down and continue to go upside down the mountain.
Right.
I imagine there must have been a little bit of fear in your ride.
Yeah, there was a little bit of fear. That's absolutely right. And it is a very, very dangerous sport. And when people do crash, it's often fatal. In this instance, you know, I was obviously fine. We weren't taking too many risks because we weren't trying to break any speed records. But it was still pretty hairy, would be the word I would use. It felt a little bit like, if you can imagine being on a roller coaster that's not attached to any rails. That's how I would sort of describe it.
Well, what was the biggest lesson you took away from all the research and writing you did for your book, Speed Kings, Andy?
That's a great question. I guess the thing I would want to come across is that, you know, as a professional sports writer myself and a great sports fan, we often use words like heroism and bravery these days. They've become quite devalued, I think. We use them too readily in our sports coverage. And some of the men in this book, they really were heroes, and they gave me a much better understanding of what bravery and heroism really mean, because ultimately many of them went on to serve in the Second World War, and our hero, Billy Fisk, became a fighter pilot. He became one of the first American pilots to die in the Second World War. And really, you know, that's the final third of the book, and I found that, learning about that, writing about that, a very moving thing, and it certainly means I won't be tossing around words like hero so quickly and easily anymore.
Well, thanks for the stories and the experience without all the danger, Andy.
Pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Andy Bull. His book is Speed Kings, the 1932 Winter Olympics and the Fastest Men in the World. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.